Thank you for that, and welcome back to the show. Rick Tittle with you coast to coast and around the world on the American Forces Radio Network. It is Tuesday in our first hour. This is when we do sales sport talk. I'm here with my co-host, Karen Lyle. How are you, Karen?
I am doing great, Rick.
Fantastic. And also, and you can see on twitch.tv on the cameras, our first guest today, we're going to have a couple, but this segment is Tammy L. Hall, and she is a jazz musician, composer, featured in 2 weeks inside Studio D featured album. I'm holding up to the Twitch cameras, Blue Soul from the Tammy L. Hall Quintet. So, Tammy, this is a segment about sailing. How do you fit into this?
Well, I love sailing. I don't get to do it often, but I love sailing. Usually, you know, being invited by friends to go out on their boats, but just being out in that beautiful blue expanse, it's really inspirational for me.
Well, and Tammy, we used your For Aretha song that you did on the Ida Lewis race as kind of a backdrop, and it's always been my priority to feature musicians when we're doing sports, because we started out with music and sports. So I have a question for you. You improvise when you compose something, even though you had For Aretha as something that was, you know, had some themes. Wasn't that a unique performance that you did for the 2 weeks inside Studio D album?
It was. It can't ever be repeated unless I would actually sit down and try to transcribe what took place in the studio that afternoon. You know, the song always comes as a form, and usually you have to write it down because you're having to communicate this to other musicians. But normally, if I were just to sit down and play, it could be a totally different piece. It would still have the same theme.
Mm-hmm. So is it really a melody that you work with, or more a rhythmic theme?
It's a melody and chords that accompany that. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So I really think that in a lot of ways, improvising in jazz is a little bit like sailing. Because you don't know what the wind's going to do.
You don't know what the wind's going to do, but you're prepared for any and all situations or scenarios. And even then, you know, the pop quiz is always when this is, everything's outside of the box. And especially in improvisation, because it's about you. So it's about what you bring to the scenario. As I said, you know, you may have all, for musicians, you may have all the theory and all the technique, but that's not the music of it. And so even in sailing, you know all the technical things to do, and you know all the protocols, but there are always situations that arise, or there's something within you that's the artist in you that makes you stand apart from the rest who are ordinary. But you're the one who you have a relationship with your vessel, and you have a relationship with the water, you have a relationship with nature that no one else has. And each of those, you know, those relationships are unique.
That's very interesting the way you put that. I like that sort of parallel there. The thing I think is interesting about jazz to me is there has to be a certain point where you kind of get it, when that light bulb comes out. It's like, you know, the double dutch with, and you got to jump in. And if you're like in a band and you're not hearing it, and you know what I mean? Jazz is that way. You can't just jump in with your bass and do your own thing if it's not meshing with everyone else.
You have to be always aware of a present. You have to stay present about everyone else's conversation, because jazz is minimally a dialogue, unless you're playing, you know, solo. But always in an ensemble or a big band setting, even though there's certainly, you know, very verbose, I'll dare say, maps of the music, but you still have to listen to each other. So you can't keep your eyes stuck to the notes on the page. You got to listen to the music that's happening around you so that you know how to be in the conversation.
And I would imagine there were probably many times in your career when you don't have anything structured and you just start to maybe just jam with other, and you think, I wish this was an album right now. Can we write this down? How am I going to get this back?
Worst thing you could ever do is write it down. And the best thing you can do is try to live a lifestyle that helps you remember.
Yes.
You know, or just, you know, remember it. And if you can afford it, when you have those jam sessions, try to do it in a studio or have a, you know, a friend who's an engineer who can just come in and capture. But you don't want to be aware of that, because the moment you become aware of this thing going on behind you, you know, capturing the moment, it, for some people, and I know sometimes for me, it changes my atmosphere. So now I'm conscious that I'm being recorded.
And then for you as well, as the
dynamic.
Leader. Yeah, we're speaking to Tammy L. Hall, by the way, jazz musician, composer. When you have a huge ensemble like that, some people think, okay, now we're done. Some people think, oh, no, I got five more minutes here.
Mm-hmm.
And then that's up to you to, like, okay, we're wrapping it up.
Yeah. Yeah.
Well, and Tammy, you are a woman in jazz. Mm-hmm. And today, if I would say I had any theme,
still,
it is that we have several women. We have several women on this show who mm-hmm. are women in sailing, women in jazz. How has that experience been for you? Is it something that you've noticed as a, you know, being a woman, or do you just feel like, you know, it's just like, it's, gender is not an issue?
I would like to say that gender is not an issue, and the fact is that it is. And I think we all handle it in our own way, but there still must be advocacy for visibility, for recognition and acknowledgement of women in music, period. You know, women usually have more recognition in classical music as violinists and pianists, but pay some attention to how they are adorned for the stage and for an audience. And it's usually very, very femininely presented.
Mm-hmm.
And looking at me, you would not say that I was that. And to some people, that seems to be threatening. My dress, for me, is practical, and it's comfortable. And maybe when I lose 100 pounds, I might put on one of those dresses. But it's about, for me, it's about being comfortable. Some people really misconstrue that as trying to, that I'm trying to be, present something masculine.
You think people would just be interested in the music and I not
would,
the aesthetics behind it?
I would prefer
it.
For
yeah.
them to be, but we seem not to roll that way very much.
Well, the thing I think is fascinating about you as well is that you have taught this to from children to Stanford, and
mm-hmm.
then you have the national orchestras of Azerbaijan from Turkmenistan. What's it like teaching? Because I'm sure they were so hungry to learn that.
They were, but I'll tell you in particular about the orchestra in Turkmenistan, that the horn section, the brass section was all men, and they were not buying me.
Wow.
And I had to finally, through my interpreter, say, when she told me that the trombonist said, I don't want to be here. And it's like, I don't need an interpreter for that. I know. You don't want to be here. And I had to say, you know, but we're here. And our language, music is our language.
Right.
And so I have an opportunity to get something from you. I would hope that you would take this opportunity to take from me anything in music that you might need, or you might be, you know, surprised to discover that we can have a more profound conversation in music. And at the end of that 2 weeks in Turkmenistan, the first person to put their arm around my shoulder
wow.
was that trombone player.
The Turkmenistan trombonist. That
the
sounds like a good novel.
It does. Well, you know,
that's a great story, though. He finally opened his mind and made it about the music and nothing else.
It's. I'm still surprised. You know, women, we are more than half the population of humanity, and we still get a bad rap around the world. I just find that I don't understand.
I think part of it understand. Is too preconceptions that people have, and I'm just going to speak here as a woman mm-hmm. co-host and just a woman who travels. Is that, when I was traveling in Zanzibar not too long ago, and I went out sailing on during Ramadan. I was mm-hmm. actually the first woman to ever sail a dhow in Stonetown that mm-hmm. any of those fishermen knew. And to me, it was ordinary. But
right.
to them, they just didn't expect it. And
you
so it was shocking.
I know.
But they got used to it, you know, and they said, oh, okay. Oh, you don't want us to teach you how to sail. You actually know how to sail. You just want to know how to sail a dhow.
Right.
<you know? laughs>
So here's this black woman in Turkmenistan, you know, a black woman with the baton in her left hand. I just couldn't get any more against the grain than that, really, for them. You know,
well,
you hold
the
baton in the right hand.
Yeah. No, and it's, I wish we had more time. We're up against a hard break right here. Tammy L. Hall, everyone, check out the album. I'm holding it up to the Twitch cameras. You got to come back. We need more time with you.
I'd love to come back. Thank you so much.
Thank you so much. Tammy L. Hall, everyone. Rick Tittle with Karen Lyle. Come on back.
This is Karen Lyle with SailSport Talk, and today we are on the Treasure Island Sailing Center, and the U.S. sailing team is training for the Olympics, and today I have with me Erica Reinecke. Erica, it's a pleasure to see you today.
Thanks, good to be here today.
So you're going to be training today, and we're going to see you out there on the boat. Can you tell us a little bit about the event that you are preparing for and that you are an Olympic hopeful for?
First of all, we're here to work on some heavy air training out of the San Francisco Bay. Usually this venue provides a lot of, you know, windy conditions, so we're excited to get out and go work on the things that we need to work on to prepare for the World Championships at the end of July. So that's the main reason why we're here. And then also the Olympics is next summer, so just trying to ramp up the training and get prepared for the next few events that we have in order to perform at our best at the Olympics.
When you're out there, and it's in this single-handed sport, mm-hmm. and you're feeling the wind through your hair, and you're feeling the control of the boat, can you describe what that is like for you, what the physical sensation and the emotional sensation is like?
Yeah, absolutely. So my competitors know me as launching very, very early for whenever we go out for a race. And I'm always the first to be on the boat ramp, like send my boat off. And actually, the reason why I do that is, well, first of all, the boat ramp is always crazy with a bunch of sailors like trying to get their boats out. So I like to be the first to get off the ramp. But also that moment where I just get off the ramp and like I like to take a second to just admire the beauty of where I am. We sail in all these cool different places and just take a couple deep breaths and just realize like what I'm doing and how much I love what I'm doing and where I'm at. Sometimes there's mountains when we launch. Sometimes there's like palm trees. There's all this different, like you only live once. And so I think it's really important just to take in the little moments, even though you're going to go out there and race the whole time, the whole rest of the day. But that little moment of just being out there first and, you know, really appreciating where I'm at is a big moment. So something that I love about the sport.
And you're going to train a little bit today. What are your goals for today?
Ooh, well, today we're going to be working on a lot of boat speed stuff. We kind of, us as a team, Paige and I and Coach Steve, we kind of struggled with getting up to boat speed in the last event that we sailed, which was about, I think, 2 weeks ago. So we're going to work on some boat speed stuff, get kind of tuned in to the sail shape, sail setup, hiking technique, and that's going to be the main focus of the day.
Great. Well, I'm going to wish you the best success, Erica.
Thank you so much. Thanks.
In 1989, an all-female sailing crew of 12 left everything behind. With the blessing of the Duchess of York, racing 33,000 miles in the longest and most challenging race of all time, Sony Pictures presents Maiden, a new film about the journey of the first ever all-female sailing crew competing in the Whitbread round-the-world race and overcoming obstacles when many said they couldn't achieve their dream. It starts Friday, June 28th in New York and Los Angeles, opens nationwide July 26th.
It doesn't really matter. I don't like my job, and I don't think I'm going to go anymore.
Tittle thinks there's a direct correlation between dogs and lightning.
Welcome back to the show. Rick Tittle with you, coast to coast, border to border, around the world on the American Forces Radio Network. We continue Salesport Talk with our co-host here. You can see her on the Twitch app. It is, of course, Karen Lyle. And we're very happy now to be joined via Skype by Don Riley. Don Riley is one of the great sailors in the history of America and has competed in four America's Cups, four around-the-world sailboat races, a watch captain, an engineer, a diver, and Michigan State alumnus of the alumna of the year. You beat out Steve Garvey and Draymond Green, huh?
There may have been different divisions.
Anyway, how did you get involved? I would just assume, you know, you're on the Great Lakes and it was in your blood, or am I wrong?
Actually, it was. My great-grandfather was a sailmaker who was a canvas maker who made the tops for Model Ts, which you would think made us really wealthy. It didn't. It made us really good sailors.
Well, and Don, you mentioned that, of course, there were different divisions in the race that Rick just referred to, and I wanted to ask you, I was just talking to Erica Reinke, who is a rising star with the Olympic U.S. sailing team, and she mentioned that she thought it would be great to have a division for women and men competing together, a mixed division for the smaller boats that they sail. What do you think about men and women competing together in the same races?
It's actually what I've been working on for my whole life. The first time we just mentioned Maiden in the commercial break, and the first time I did that, that was the first time I'd ever sailed with an all-women's team for any serious event. And I did not want to. I wanted to sail with men because that's what I'd been sailing with. Sailing is one of the sports that you can compete effectively in a mixed team. So I feel it's a responsibility of the sport to ensure that that happens.
What was it like for you, Don, on the way up? Because you're absolutely right. When you think about it, the tactics behind it and the knowledge that you get seems to be not gender specific, and it's not like it's something where you need a huge weightlifter to do it. So why do you think it was? It's just that men were so used to being captains, and did people accept you kicking and screaming, or was a transition all right for you?
Well, let's just start off with men do have an advantage across the board in the sports, in business, in politics. And it's not fair, and we're changing it, but you do need to be strong, and you do need to be fit, and you do need to be an athlete. The thing about sailing is that the bigger the boat in particular, the more it's advantageous to have a combination of sizes and strengths. You still need to be fit, and it's still a sport, but there's if the men are in power, the men choose men, and that's the final frontier, is to have the women in power. So across the board, have women CEOs of corporations, women on the boards, women as coaches, women as team leaders, and women as skippers of large programs like America's Cups and around the world races.
Well, and you've done a lot of leadership yourself since you've left some of the more active racing, and you're helping youth. Tell us a little bit about that.
So I am, just to clarify, still competing pretty actively, but I also am running a place called Oak Cliff Sailing, which it's in Oyster Bay, New York. It is a training and coaching center for athletes that have progressed to a level and want to take the next step up. It is residential. We currently have 32 high-performance athletes, all who want to go to the Olympics with coaches on the water, and it's blowing about 18 out there, so it's a little bit sporty. We have four boats that we're just racing in the Annapolis to Newport, so the offshore. We also have match racing, which is like the America's Cup. And then we have other programs that are involved with onboard media reporting and foiling. So it's a pretty intense program, and it is unlike anything else in the whole world.
Speaking with Don Riley, Yachtswoman of the Year, Rolex Yachtswoman of the Year, which was 20 years ago. Does it seem like yesterday, or does it seem like a long time ago?
It seems like yesterday, mm-hmm. But so does my whole career. And that's part of the cool thing about Oak Cliff, is I am sitting here competing with and coaching and developing and forming and molding, you know, athletes who will be the leaders of tomorrow. So I get to be able to interact with them on an equal level. It keeps me very young.
You know, what's interesting too, is whenever I bring up something athletic I did in high school, people are like, whatever. I do like the fact that you still list that you are the discus record holder. Was it Lance Cruz High School?
Lance Cruz, damn straight.
What was the distance?
I think it was 112.8.
Wow, you got to get that 8 in there. Yeah. Tell us.
It makes a difference.
It sure does. Tell us about Maiden. This is going to be releasing on June 28th.
Yeah, so Maiden is the story of the first all-women's team to go around the world. It truly is Tracy Edwards' story. She was the founder, the person that did that ran away, you know, from her home, ran away to sea, decided she wanted to do this, networked and mortgaged her house and made the race happen. It also has a fair amount of the sailing side in it. So for sailors, it's fun to watch. For non-sailors, they never even knew this happened because it was so long ago and it was before social media and the internet. So they're discovering the event, the challenge, the adventure, the drama, and the female empowerment.
Well, and she's going to be a guest on our show next week, so I'm really looking forward to hearing her perspective on it. But today we have you here, and this is just one of the many races that you have done that have been worldwide. What was that, about 3,300 miles or something like that? That was a long distance.
I think it was 3,800.
3,800. What's that like when you're out there for that length of time and just surviving on the boat and sailing and racing?
Yeah, the Whitbread is then became the Volvo, and now they call it the Ocean Race. And it is a long race, but you do it, at least times we did it, I did it twice, was 6 different legs. So it was between 18 and 38 days at a time. And then you all finish. Whenever you finish, you regroup, you work on the boat, get everything sorted, get some sleep, and then you start again. And you do, you know, another month at sea. And what is it like? I'll tell you what, now that I'm coaching people and I'm responsible on shore, it's a whole lot easier on the boat. There's no question about it.
You know, it's interesting, Dawn, because this was about 2002, I think, and I was doing this very show, and we had a guy named Bruce Schwab who was sailing in the Vendée Classic, and he was doing solo, but once a week he would call me on his satellite phone, and sometimes he would be exhausted, sometimes he'd be a little bit woozy, sometimes he'd be in a situation that was kind of perilous, and we all kind of went along with him. And then I saw that Robert Redford movie, All Is Lost, which I don't know how accurate it is, but I just think about those moments of peril, whether it's a squall or a hole in the boat. What was maybe, now that you're safely on shore, you can recall one of those more perilous moments you had?
Actually, the only time I was ever really somewhat afraid was the second time around, and we'd lost half of our rudder, and we ended up in 60 knots of wind against probably 6 knots of tide, so big breaking waves, and it was intense. People were being injured, and I was responsible. That was scary. But other than that, we are full-on preparation, and when you're out there, you believe, whether it's true or not, you believe that you are in control, and that's just the way it is.
Well, 60 knots of wind, that's significant. How did you handle that particular... I assume all the sails were down at that point.
No, because we were still racing.
Ah, so you're still racing in 60 knots of wind. Was that behind you, or were you going into it?
No, it was on the beam, so about 70 degrees apparent, 110 degrees true wind angle. So it was pretty intense, and we just, I mean, that's the thing, is that you're always racing. This is not a survival around the world. Remember when Laura Decker went around the world and everybody was saying, oh my God, it's so dangerous. I said, no, if you're not racing and not pushing, you're just sailing around the world, and you slow down if you have to. For us, we had to push.
Tell us about when you first got on with America's Cup, because that was, you know, until the 90s, kind of an all-male club, wasn't it?
Yes. Yes, it was. And that was literally me just saying, I need to do this, and I want to do this. And I was lucky because Gary Jobson, who's ESPN and has done, you know, amazing things, America's Cup, he was covering the Whitbread, so he was also involved with an America's Cup team. And I bugged him, and he's like, okay, try out, see what happens. And I think they were probably a little surprised too. I think they're probably doing it in a little bit just for publicity. And they're like, oh, crap, here you go. You got a job.
What do you think is
the nature of a racer in comparison to a cruiser, and what, in your particular instance, how your personality fits in with that?
I'm always a little bit competitive. I always want to be learning something. So I think racing really does help you with that. But I think, or is more of a fit, but I think racing also helps cruisers, because you are put in a tighter situation where you have to make decisions. You have to understand the loads. You're pushing the boat a little more, which then I think helps you when you're in a more leisurely pace. But you might have a intense situation like a lee shore coming into port where you have to perform.
You know, I was thinking too, you're a helms person, obviously. We talked about your diving skills, but engineer, I think, is intriguing because a lot of people know the ins and outs of sailing a boat, but if you blow a spark plug or something, they can't go into the engine and fix it. So what's it like when you basically can do everything on that boat?
Well, I grew up and put myself through college at Michigan State by being a boat captain. So I had to know how to fix electronics, diagnose engine problems, change impellers, bleed engines, all of those types of things. So it was just a tool that I wanted to get a boat from, Chicago to Mackinac or to Detroit on a delivery. And I had to have that work when I was 15, 16 years old. And it is empowering, though, because you know that when you're on a boat, like a diesel engine, it's not that complicated. Maybe if it's in an Italian sports car of today with electronic, and computer controls, you've got a problem. But for a basic diesel engine, they're workhorses and they're pretty simple. And again, it's empowering to know that you are self-sufficient. And even better, if you're on a sailboat, you always have your sails.
That is Dawn Riley, and she has done it all. You see her on TV as well. And listen, Dawn, it's fantastic to talk to you. And congratulations on Maiden, and enjoy that when it comes out. And hopefully we'll catch up down the road.
All right. Thank you very much. Keep up the good work.
All right.
Thank you, Dawn.
Yeah. And any last thoughts before we say bye today about...
Just that next week we're going to have the producer and also Tracy Edwards coming on the show to talk more about Maiden, so that should be fun.
Good stuff. That'll be out on June 28th, so we still have time there. I want to thank our guest, Dawn Riley, and of course for coming in studio, the magnificent Tammy L. Hall. I'm Rick Tittle. We will take a quick break. Come on back on Sports Byline.